Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Dr. Carl, he is our Australian science communicator and a popularizer. He's joining us on the line. A very, very, very good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Dr. Howard.
So here's a question from one of our listeners. She says, my son has a science question for Dr. Carl. Is it true that clouds are whiter when the sun is shining through or on them, and that's why you can't see gray clouds that aren't necessarily rain clouds?
Yes, that's roughly right. So what you have is that a cloud roughly a kilometer by kilometer by kilometer weighs about 600 tons in terms of the water vapor sort of suspended there inside the cloud. What's holding them up? The movement of air. And why is it moving? Why is it rising? Because the sun throws on each square meter of the Earth's surface, when the sun is directly above it, roughly a kilowatt of power, about half of that heat, a bit less than half of that visible light, and a tiny amount ultraviolet. So the lighter and fluffier the cloud, the less it weighs, the more the sun can penetrate through it. And when you've got a big fat cloud, well, you need a big updraft to hold it there. And of course, that's being held up by the big winds. And of course, you can't see through it because there's so many water droplets between you and the sun.
All right. So there you have it. And this one, I don't understand. I don't even understand the question, let alone if there's an answer related to it. Jenny says, how is studying volcanoes in Iceland teaching us about Mars?
Have you been to Iceland, Howard?
Not recently, no, or ever.
It's a wonderful place. And so you can go to a place called Mývatn, inland, and you're in outside, it's snowing. The sun rises at about 11 o'clock in the morning and goes down by 1 o'clock. Wow. And it just barely climbs above the horizon. Right. And it's actually quite cool. And there's snow on the ground because you're there in the middle of winter, and you're in this hot pool. And it's just amazing being in all this warm water. Incredible. And this pool at Mývatn actually expands, gets bigger by a few centimeters each year. It's right on the mid-oceanic ridge, or the oceanic ridge, and so it's pushing apart in both directions. So understanding tectonic activity on Iceland teaches us something about why we have no tectonic activity on Mars. And we're not too sure why. We think the core has solidified, but we're also sure there's heat coming from below the surface because we've found an ocean of liquid water a few kilometers down. What's keeping it hot? We don't know. So there's a whole bunch of mysteries as to what's going on with Mars, and Iceland's one of the places we're looking to try and solve that.
Incredible. Really, really amazing. And then another listener asking, carrying on the cloud conversation, so then why are clouds colored when water is transparent?
Water's not totally transparent. So if you hold a glass up, you can see through it, no big deal at all. And then if you put on goggles, and then dive under the ocean surface half a meter, and then if you look at your hand in front of your face, it's perfectly clear, the water. But if you look at somebody 10 meters away, they're a little bit bluish. And if you look at somebody 40 or 50 meters away, they're distinctly bluish. So water is very faintly colored blue.
Is it true that that rain or the clouds have absorbed the pollution in the air, and that's why the water isn't clean, rainwater isn't properly clean?
Yes and no. In some cases, in a place called Wheeling, West Virginia, mentioned in a famous song from a few decades back, and during the time when we had acid rain, when the fossil fuel companies were telling really big lies, but so big that we could pick them up easily, they were saying that there was no sulfur in the coal, and there was, and the sulfur was being burnt and turned into sulfuric acid, and we actually had the rain falling in Wheeling in the state of Virginia in the USA with a pH of 2, which is pretty close.
Oh, so that's the acid rain. That's where that.
So, so there's some pollution in the air. It depends on how much local industry there is, and also dirt, because much of the dust from the Sahara blows across the Atlantic and ends up on the other side. So there's natural pollution and human-made pollution.
Right. So in other words, there could be a bit of dust in it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's pollution in the industrial sense, I guess. Okay, and Linda says, I'm watching the volcano in Iceland. It's becoming an addiction of mine. It's absolutely fabulous and fascinating. All right, I need to get onto that addiction. It's terrible to hear that there's something that people are addicted to, and I am not involved in that. Either way, speaking about latest fads, there's this whole thing about drinking water that that lettuce leaves have been soaked into, and that's meant to help us sleep.
That's right. So this is a meme that's going around on Twitter, on TikTok. So I'm going to make a TikTok to fight it under the name of Dr. Carl. I went looking through the scientific literature, I couldn't find, maybe I was looking in the wrong place, I couldn't find any studies showing.
You see, because you're getting your information from,
made you sleepy.
You're getting your information from those, your scientific information from the wrong places. It's meant to be TikTok as your source. Nothing else.
That's right. Or Facebook.
Or Facebook. Or,
anyway. So what I did find was three studies, and not lots, but only three. And they didn't look at lettuce leaves, but rather chemical extracts taken out of the lettuce leaves. And it wasn't tested on humans, but rather tested on mice. And they didn't just give these lettuce extracts to mice and say, and look at them and say, how long does it take to go to sleep? But rather they gave them a powerful sleep-inducing drug called phenobarbital, and then measured how long it took them to go to sleep with or without the lettuce extract. And so that's not the same as just drinking lettuce leaf juice. But then finally, if some of the mice took too long to go to sleep, they simply wiped them out of the study, because that would have interfered with their average of having a nice low average. So it was a series of really dodgy studies, poorly done, and in no way showing that lettuce leaves can help you go to sleep. But on the other hand, one person did get 4.6 million views on TikTok.
Well, that's
so
what counts.
I'll do mine later this week. So everybody in South Africa, watch mine on Dr. Carl, D-R-K-A-R-L. It'll be out later this week, fighting that meme.
So I've got a bit of a different question for you, and I'm fascinated by your take on this. I wrote an article today for one of the local, the News 24, which is a local publication. And in it, I speak about the fact, I'm very concerned by the fact that Facebook has done an about turn on information around the pandemic and the origin of it, whether it came from a lab, and the information, of course, I don't know. I'm a lay person. I certainly don't have access to information that other people have or don't have. But it bothers me that there's a danger that politics has interfered with science. In other words, because Donald Trump said it, and whether you're a fan or you hate the guy, it's irrelevant. It became it started off political, then it became social, and then organizations like Facebook said, well, we're not even going to allow articles like that on our site. Then it changes politically. Biden says, well, maybe it did come from a laboratory. We need to look into it. And all of a sudden, we are now able to do so. What bothers me there is, wasn't the scientist community or the scientific community being almost bullied by politics and social media into following a narrative that might or might not be the case?
Yes, this has happened many times before, especially with regard to climate change.
That's a good example.
They're still doing that. With regard to trying to work out the origin of diseases, it was claimed that with the original SARS virus, we worked out where it came from. A little cough there. Within a few months, that's not true. It took about 10 years. With Ebola virus, it took us 15 years.
Wow.
So these things do not happen overnight.
Right.
The bottom line is, at the moment, we don't have enough information to say one way or the other, and we're trying to find out. And people trying to say, but I'm pretty sure the answer is this. Sure. Put your money where your mouth is. Take out a $10,000 bet on it.
Absolutely. But is the scientist community guided by this? Because or influenced by politics in a positive and a negative way? In other words, did the scientists, who really are the only people I think we can trust in this process, not the politicians, not anybody else around the world, were they curtailed it's because they were almost either overtly or subtly sent a message to say, well, you can't, don't look into this. Don't look into this. This isn't acceptable.
We did send a bunch of scientists, the World Health Organization, mm-hmm. To go to Wuhan and to go and have a look. Part of the problem was that the Chinese, being a little bit paranoid, mm-hmm. did wipe some of the data. So, for example, with the Wuhan market, where we think it arose from, when the scientists went to have a look there a few days after the first outbreak happened, it had been sterilized, steam cleaned from top to bottom. That is not the way you do data. So absolutely. We see this behavior by governments around the world.
Sure.
And it all depends whether you love that government or you hate that government as to whether you decide that this is a good thing they're doing or a bad thing.
All right. Moving on to back to normal science stuff, or tell us about United Airlines and Japan Airlines have each placed an option on a supersonic jets. This sounds very, very cool.
Yeah. So I regret not having ever traveled in the Concorde.
Me too.
At 2.
Me
2. Times the speed of sound. Oh, mate, I should have done it. I was just
me
stupid.
Too. And I could have on so many occasions, and I didn't, and I really regret it.
Now, what's happening at the moment is that, with regard to global warming, air transport accounts for about 2 or 3% of carbon emissions just by itself, and Airbus has headed down a pathway where it says, we recognize this, and if somebody gives us the money, we will come up with 3 aeroplanes that are totally hydrogen powered, and if you get the hydrogen from renewables, it's totally carbon free 100%. And they're looking at a little puddle jumper like a Dash 8 that would fly a few hundred kilometres with 30 or 40 or 50 people, maybe 1,000 kilometres, and then something like a Boeing 737 or an Airbus 320 that could, say, do 5,000, and then something that could go intercontinental like a flying wing and could carry a lot more. With regard to this supersonic plane, at the moment they're going for the G-whiz factor, and they're very loose with details, but they're saying that the fuel draw to fly supersonic at 1.6 times the speed of sound and not have a big boom, because they've got new technology, would be, the fuel draw per passenger would be 5 to 8 times what it is for going subsonic. And they're saying that there's this wonderful new synthetic fuel that they can invent, but they haven't invented yet, that'll cost between 3 and 4 times as much. So on one hand, I'm thinking they're trying to do G-whiz vaporware to bring up their stock price for Boeing. But on the other hand, maybe there is a pathway where we can go both supersonic and have hydrogen-powered planes. The trouble is that volume for volume and energy, hydrogen has 1/5 or 1/4 of the energy of jet fuel, which is kerosene. So for the same amount of energy, you've got to have about 3 or 4 times the volume. An easy way is to get an Airbus 380 and just wipe out the top deck and fill it full of fuel. But a better design is what they're coming up. Look at the Airbus website, a triangular flying wing. So it's all up in the air. And depending on how we go in politics, that'll determine where we end up with our future aeroplanes.
Dr. Carl, that's where we leave it. The Australian science communicator and populariser and awesome guest.